This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello there, buddies. It's Michael Cruz Kane back again with another episode of A Good Cry directly for your earwaves. This one with the hilarious Dana Donnelly, who you would know if you have the internet. She's TikTok. She's TikTok? She is TikTok. She is Twitter. She is Instagram. And she is the literal embodiment of YouTube. Dana is a stand-up and an actress, and you will hear that she is incredibly funny. I laugh to a degree that I would describe as too much during this episode. We talk about Dana's father, who died in 2015, and about the nature of what was and continues to be a complicated relationship, which I think is something that's really important to talk about when we talk about grief, because it's not always the case that the person who has died or to whom we no longer have access occupies a space in our mind where, like, this is a perfect person. For most of us, that relationship has its ups and downs, and that is certainly the case with Dana. And one of the things we talk about that stuck with me is the way in which she continues to process that relationship as she gets older, and how she has made more space for grace for him in that relationship, and for empathy, and understanding that her dad was just a guy like any other guy, meaning he was great in some ways, and in other ways, not as great. I mean, that's true of every person except, obviously, me, who is flawless. My wife and kids would tell you so. Haha, don't ask them. This is Dana Donnelly on A Good Cry. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dana, the way that we start our podcast is by asking the question, how would you describe your relationship to grief?
Okay, so I would say my relationship to grief is maybe avoidant, disconnected. I definitely have a lot of people in my life close to me who have died, and I still don't think I've really, like, figured out grieving, but I guess that's just kind of what it is. So I guess I would say my relationship to grief is undefined.
Okay, beautiful.
A work in progress.
You say avoidant, meaning, like, in the aftermath of whatever the losses are you like, let's just keep moving, or?
Yeah, I'm very much a let's just keep moving kind of person. I think that it's really hard for me to, like, dwell too much. And I definitely have, like, okay, so I think my dad died 7 years ago, as of November 3rd. And I just kind of, it's like, it really comes up in spurts of, like, how much I want to engage with it or not, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you say you want to, how much you want to engage with it, what is a way in which you engage?
Just, like, literally thinking about it. Or, like, I feel like also grief is so weird because it's so brought on by, like, external sources of jogging memories and, like, just hearing a song or, like, seeing something or, like, watching a movie. Like, it's, like, things like that, like, remembering specific instances that almost feel, like, non-consensual at times where it's, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Where you're, like, I actually do not want to be sad right now. Why right. Is the supermarket playing this song?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, the, like, in the immediate aftermath of grief, the problem also was, like, oh, my brain can free associate anything back to my son. Like, it's not so anything, like, you know, someone can be like, hey, do you want a cookie? And I'm like, okay, cookies remind me of. And then I've, like, improv mind my way all the way back to now I have to lay down for a week.
Yes, exactly. I think that happens a lot to me where it's like just something that, you know, 7 degrees disconnected and then I am sobbing.
Yeah, exactly. It's that Kevin Bacon game, except with limitless
so
sadness.
So true. Yes, exactly. 7 degrees separation from this horrible, horrible, painful emotion.
You said that your father died 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my dad died in a freak accident. He was really young. It was very quick and very kind of like surreal. And I think it was very hard to accept because I don't know, like my grandpa just died a couple weeks ago as well.
Wait, but a couple weeks ago now or a couple weeks ago then?
Couple weeks ago now.
Oh, shit. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. He was a lot older, but he died like a lot slower. Like he like had a couple strokes about a year ago and then like slowly died. And I think it was interesting to go through that process with someone that I was really close. This was the second person I was close to who's died. And I think it was like really almost like realizing how much I preferred the sudden death to the kind of slow, like watching someone be sick and die.
That is, I think, an interesting thing to say, because I think a lot of people, first of all, don't ever experience like both of those things.
Yeah.
I think most people don't experience sudden death, like, you know, like the like surprise grief in their life as much.
Yeah.
People often wish for the other thing. You know what I mean? Whichever one they've had, they're like, oh, it would have been so much easier if it had been the other way.
Yeah.
And you have had them both.
Yeah.
And you're saying if you had to choose, which obviously you don't, sudden
I think
was less,
so.
Less
it was difficult. It was less difficult. It was definitely less difficult. And I think it also was the kind of thing where my like the grieving that I did do felt a lot more productive.
In the
sudden death.
Father.
Mm-hmm, yeah. With my dad. Yeah. Cause it's like, you know, if you just like have to accept something, I think it's like it's almost like easier. Whereas like if you get to like watch, I'm not being very articulate about this. It's like something I never talk about this.
You're being amazing.
Yeah, I just think it's so weird to like slowly accept that someone is going to die as opposed to accepting that like, yeah, they're dead. That's just what it is.
I've been doing this podcast for a while and really haven't thought about that. That like the suddenness of it does force you to be like, it happened, as opposed to a protracted loss where like, I don't want to speak for you, obviously, but like there's so many different. Maybe I hope that he won't die, or like there's all or maybe I hope that it'll be a certain way, or like whatever the like the click clack up of the roller coaster is like the hardest part in a way.
It's like a suspense building where it's like, I don't want to be on this roller coaster. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I never want to get on in the first place.
Yeah.
Why is it so slow?
Why is it so slow? Yeah, exactly.
So your father died 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And you said it was a freak accident?
Yeah, he was run over by a car on his bike.
Oh.
I know.
And how did you find out that it had happened?
I had been planning to come home. It was around Thanksgiving. It was November 3rd, I believe he died. And I had been planning to come home like for Thanksgiving. And my mom, just like I was at college in Washington State, and my mom called me. And she was like, you need to come home. And I Googled my city and news because my first thought was that there was like a shooting at one of my siblings' schools because there had been like a lot of shootings going on. And I think my sister's school had just had like a school shooting threat.
Oh,
and so I was, that was my first thought. And then so I Googled like Palo Alto, my city. And then I hit the news tab. And the first thing that came up was like cyclist killed in accident, but like all of the information was kind of off, like his age wasn't correct, and like there was like a lot of things that I was like, I don't know. But I kind of in that moment had this like feeling, this very like sinking feeling that I was like, okay, like I'm pretty sure that's him. And because he like biked, and it was where he biked and like whatever. And then I went home, and my mom met me at the airport, and she was like, and I was like, oh, his dad, like did dad die? And she was like, yeah.
So she waited to tell you until you were there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what happened when, like, how I felt when I knew my son was going to die.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, is it, like, disbelief? Is it, like, do you remember, like, what that was like that time?
It was, like, because I read all these, like, news articles that, again, it was, like, almost like the universe deliberately kind of scrambled information where it was a kind of an uncertain thing. So I just remember being on the plane and like just mentally trying to like bargain. Like, I think that's like a big thing. I'm like, just please, like, I hope that that's not true. Like, whatever, blah, blah. And then I think it was, there was like a level of shock, but it was also, again, so final and so fast because his body was kind of, dare I say, like fucked up, and like seeing, kept getting to see it, I guess, that also made it feel very, very believable and very final.
Jeez. And do you have siblings?
Yeah, I do. This is actually a modern family portrait behind me that my mom has. So the tall one is my dad. The second tallest one is my mom, which is really funny because actually she's shorter than all of us. and so it's symbolic, obviously. And then that's me, the second tallest. I'm actually the shortest. That's my little sister. She's way taller than me. And that's my brother. He's way taller than me.
Okay, so this is a podcast, but you guys can't see an amazing thing.
Oh yeah, sorry.
That is behind her.
Yeah,
looks like the like sort of like skinny trapezoid heads.
Skinny trapezoid heads. It's exactly. Okay.
I think that's very reductive. It's beautiful art, but I think that's the only way that I can explain it.
Yeah, skinny trapezoids.
Okay, wait, sorry, but you were talking about your siblings. Okay, so you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest. Yeah.
Did you feel like you had like a particular role to play in the family when this happens? I feel like sometimes oldest kids are like, I have to like take charge, or I don't know, whatever.
It's interesting. I definitely think like in general, I always have kind of just like been take charge. But I think with this situation, I really felt like I didn't have a lot to offer because, okay, so my relationship with my dad is also really complicated and very like strained at times. And we were kind of like, we'd go in and out of talking and like, you know, we definitely had a more complicated relationship than he had with my siblings. So I think that was also really complicated is I think when someone dies, there's a lot of like, you know, just pure reverence for the person. And so I think sometimes it's like, I didn't always feel comfortable talking about like my exact feelings with my mom or my siblings. And so I kind of tried to do the whole like, just don't say anything.
Yeah, that's hard though, right?
Yeah, it was definitely like really weird because I also think because, you know, every person's relationship with someone is so different. And, you know, you don't want to like step on other people's memories of anyone else. And so just like trying to be really like mindful of that and like mindful of the fact that it's like, you know, whatever my siblings had going on with him, again, was not what I had going on with him. And just really trying not to like project that onto anyone.
And that's also a way that feels very big sibling of like, I'm going to protect you all from whatever negative feelings I have.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, I'm 7 years older than my sister. I'm 4 years older than my brother. We just had very, very different experiences.
Do you... Obviously, I don't want you to shit talk your dad necessarily.
I wouldn't.
But do you talk about that ever? Like, I don't know, in therapy, you're a comedian. Do you talk about it on stage?
It's so funny. I have a couple jokes about it, but they're very like irreverent. Like they're not really like serious, and they're kind of like a little bit shit talky. So I do talk about it. I try not to talk about it though. Like it's very much like, oh, I don't want that kind of stuff like necessarily on the record, but I think it's like funny to say in like, you know, a room of stand up. But I like,
yeah.
I've
you
never like put
like...
any of those jokes online. Like I'm not going to put them on TikTok. Yeah. Yeah. So like, I definitely do talk about it on stage a little bit, but yeah, I try not to too much. I mean, I'm really still processing, I think. Like, I think when it comes to if I'm interested in like writing about it or like doing anything with it, it's like I am, but I'm just like actually still not even there. Like, it's like, yeah, it's been 7 years, but I have nothing like, or like, I don't have any, I don't know. I want to do a fictionalized movie about my dad not actually being dead and having faked his own death because like a year after he died, I saw this Vice article that was talking about this phenomenon with middle-aged white men faking their own deaths. And it was so like the person that they interviewed, the main person they interviewed, had so much in common with my dad, like down to like their jobs, like down to like their family situations. And I'm just like, I literally look back and I'm like, that would be so funny if this was fake. So.
That's amazing. I also, it's hard to talk about it on stage. I talk about death like through comedy and it is tricky because you have to find the right place to do it or everyone hates you.
Yeah, that's, yeah. It's really easy to get people to turn on you. And it's like, how are you turning on me?
Yeah. And I think also, I have no idea how old you are. I assume exactly whatever age you want to be. You're that age.
Thank you so much. But I'm 27. Also,
I think like being, I would imagine predominantly like your audiences are pretty young too.
Yeah.
So like for a lot of those people, talking about death is like, literally, I've never even heard of that. Like what?
Yeah.
What is
that? I honestly think younger audiences who aren't like familiar with death, honestly, sometimes take to it a little better because they don't have any of their own like personal experience. So they're more willing to just be like, well, I don't know, my dad's still alive. Whereas like, I think like older audiences sometimes just like, don't like the way that I've talked about it. Or like,
I guess that makes sense. Because if it's like irreverent, I could see older audiences be like, well, that could be me.
Yeah, that's disrespectful. Yeah, exactly. And I think, so I'm like, I think people who like have dealt with death probably have more of a take on other people talking about their personal deaths than like people who don't have any experience with it.
Yeah. And I guess even as I'm saying that, I bet the younger audiences too, obviously like there are other people in those audiences whose parents have died, whose like 100%. Siblings.
And then
whatever.
That's also it is like so many people, when I do talk about it on stage, I literally always get Instagram DMs after shows being like, oh my God, like my dad's dead too. Like, I really loved hearing you talk about it. Like da da da.
Yes. That is definitely the thing that I have found in talking about it for myself is I get a lot of those, a ton of those. And it's very, do you respond to those messages?
Yeah, I'll just be like, I'll like literally be like, oh my God, like, I'm so glad you liked it. Like, whatever.
Yeah, me too. I try to respond to every single one, but it is also like, you know, it's heavy. And I feel like I'm not an expert. I'm just like, this happened to me, but I have not learned or grown in any way from it.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. Or I'm like, I don't know. I can't say it's like made me better.
Yeah, no way am I wise because of what has happened.
Or more comfortable with death. I'm like, I'm definitely not more comfortable with death.
Do you like, in terms of your relationship with your dad, do you like find yourself being like, you know, I wish things had been different or that we had resolved X, Y, Z?
It's really interesting because I think when he first died, I really felt like that a lot. Like, I really felt like, oh my God, like there was so much unresolved. Like, there was so much that I would have wanted to say. Like, there was so much blah, blah, blah. And then as time has passed, it's almost like those things resolve on their own. Like, you kind of just have, it's, I kind of like it because there's almost like this like best case scenario assumption that you can do where like whatever I would have wanted him to come around to or whatever things I would have wanted us to establish clarity or like, you know, agreement on, like I can just pretend like that is true.
So you just like, you can just
like, I could just do best case scenario. So I'm like, okay, like, it's like if I didn't have, like, I used to, okay, so at first it was really bad because it was like, I would have these fake imaginary arguments with him. And then that it would always come back to, like, I'm glad he's dead because I wouldn't have wanted to have this, like, argument with him, like, about, like, politics and stuff like that. And then I slowly was like, well, but I honestly, in good faith, it's like, I don't know if that actually would have been, like, why am I assuming that he's saying everything I wouldn't want him to say as opposed to, like, well, maybe that wouldn't be what his take was.
Right. Especially as a creative person, you can like write the rest of your dad's conversations pretty well. They're probably, he's probably amazing.
Yes, exactly. He's amazing. But I also think it's like, yeah, like you just, I think I found so much more humanity for him like over the years where it's like, at first it was like very much like, ugh, like I'm like, there was part of me that was like really relieved, you know? I think that's also a really complicated thing to say out loud to people.
Relieved in what way? What do you mean?
Relieved that, because he was such a source of stress. This is horrible, but I've talked about this, but like we had such a stressful relationship, like truly. And when he died, I was 20. So I also like wasn't very mature about it. And I can't say that I was like at all, but I think I just had kind of like initially, like there was like maybe like the first year I really was sad. And then the second year, there was almost like this kind of like, honestly, like I'm better off. Like it was like a definitely a coping thing. But I literally was just like, I was like, honestly, like I'm the least stressed I've ever been. Like this was clearly a really stressful part of my life because I feel relief constantly now that this person isn't like whatever, like stressing me out in any way. And then it kind of like slowly came back around to like, no, obviously like I miss this person, but it's, do you know what I mean?
I know. I mean, I don't personally, but I have talked to other people, a lot of people who do feel that way, who do have a, cause it's, yeah, that's like such a good point. It's not the case that every person who dies, like your relationship with them is flawless.
Perfect.
And they're ideal. And there's a part of it also, if the relationship is difficult, that seeing other people after their death, and I'm not, this might not be the case with you and your dad, but seeing other people after that person's death, like unilaterally valorize them can be a, like complicated to be like, I like you all are telling the story of this person that isn't exactly, that's not the person that I knew. I didn't have that relationship.
Yeah. And I think like that also was really hard initially, especially was just feeling like my feelings were so incongruous with other people's feelings.
And do you ever talk about that incongruity with your siblings and your mother now or since then?
I think they all have kind of like an idea, but again, it's like, I don't like to get too, I really think that everyone's personal relationship with the person like should be valued and respected. And like, I'm not here to like bring that down for anyone.
Okay. I think that is very nice. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also just like the kind of thing where it's like sometimes it does feel like it's like, am I crazy? Like, oh, do you guys like, am I crazy? Like, did I imagine this? But it's like, no, I didn't. I just had a different relationship with him. Like the way that he treated me was different than the way that he treated other people.
Yeah. And you're saying you were 20 and you said you're 7 years older than your sister. So she was 13. Like they're obviously a different relationship.
Right. Exactly. Well, there's also just like a level of like expectation with me and him. And also just like, because I was an adult, I think we just had like a different relationship, like very much so. And she was just like a kid. And then my brother also, again, had a very different relationship with him and was like also just a kid. My brother took it really hard. So again, like to my brother saying anything defamatory or whatever, I think would have been really like not well received. And it just wasn't, it just never has been, it's never been like I like want to talk shit about anyone, you know?
Right. Yeah. I guess that's what that's called being like a nice, good person.
I try.
How did your father's death change your relationship with your mom or with your whole family?
Honestly, I think it made me a lot closer to my mom specifically. But my mom and I we'd always been really close. But I think it really opened up just kind of like anything that was between us because of my dad went away. So I think it made my mom and I a lot closer. I think she slowly started kind of opening up about other things that were maybe more in line with my memories, which she hadn't until, you know, very recently. Because I think, again, like wanting to keep someone's memory pristine and kind of like pure is a natural instinct, like not wanting to speak ill of the dead, which I think is a really interesting concept, like that no one would want to speak ill of the dead, because it's like it almost devalues them and their life in certain ways, like to ignore the things that make them human and to ignore faults and stuff like that, to me almost feels like minimizing of like them and their personality in certain ways.
I mean, I love that you say that. I think that is so true that there's like this instinct to lionize. I mean, it's definitely true, like historically, to be like, you know, oh, well, whatever, all these great historical figures were totally perfect. And the other part about it that I think is true is that once if you have that feeling, right? Like, you know, this person that I loved was without flaws. And that's like a core belief. When you find out, as you inevitably will, that they were just like a person, not like a bad guy necessarily, but like, you know, whatever, they smoke cigarettes or something, that your whole worldview can collapse. Cause you're like, wait, hang on. Like
I thought you were perfect.
Yeah. My entire reality was pinned on the idea that, you know, whatever, my uncle never said a swear word, and it turns out, it's very disillusioning. I think that happens to most kids at some point. Like you said, you were 20 when he died. When I'm 12, my dad is a perfect man.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing about it is it's like, but like also because I was 20, I was like peak angst. I was peak resentful. Like I was peak everything that you can be at 20. Like I was mad. I like whatever. Like I had a a big sense of entitlement. I also had a therapist at the time who was very down on my dad, like right before he died. And she had told me to stop talking to him, like right before he died. And it was just like this funny thing where, like, I don't know, like I definitely peak vilified him in my mind. And so when he died, it was almost like he was at peak villain in a lot of ways. And that is so funny to me because it's like all that's happened as time has passed is I've realized like he just was a human. Like he was really just a guy. He had a lot of pain and sadness that he carried around with him. He was a very repressed Irish Catholic man. And I have only developed like more and more humanity and like empathy for him as I've gotten older. Because I think he also saw himself as a villain because of the way that I saw him. And I think the way that I saw him really impacted the way he saw himself, actually. And I think that I wish that, you know, through time, it's like he would have seen that like I saw him as a person, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you say that like you say that casually, but that's like that's really profound. I have kids. The way that my kids perceive me has like a tremendous value to me. And I think that feeling that you've had as you get older of like, oh, right, this is just he's like a dude. He's a guy who, you know, had he was Southern some ways great and some ways sucked like every yeah. person I ever met.
Yes. Yeah. And just being like, oh, yeah, like a lot of people suck the way that he sucked. It was just like more unique to me because he was my dad.
Right, because you had to see that every day. And there's also like that element of, I mean, possibly the two of you trying to like correct or impose your vision of the other person on the other person.
I mean, huge. I think we both just felt so misunderstood by each other. And again, I'm like, I put less blame or emphasis on myself because I was a child. But
yeah.
But I'm like, but I am like, no. I think he definitely wanted me to see him a certain way. And it really bothered him that I didn't see him the way that he wanted me to see him. And it bothered me that he didn't see me the way I wanted him to see me. So.
Yeah. And you were legitimately, you were a child. I think that's.
And legitimately, I was a child. Yeah. Ultimately, I was a child. So.
Truly, actually, you were, in fact, a child.
Yeah, exactly.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So you said that it made you and your mom closer. Like, has your mom started, like, has she, like, started dating other people? It's
yeah.
been 7 years.
I mean, it's been 7 years. My mom also, my mom is a, what do you call it? She loves a man, you know? She's a pick me. She was dating 10 months after he died. She was part of this widows group that she would talk about, and they were so funny. Like, they had a dating coach come in. Like, these women are all just, like, looking to, like, remarry, like, ASAP, basically. And she would, like, tell us about, like, what her dating coach would say, like, to the widows and, like, how to get a new man after
please,
you've, like—
Please, are there widow-specific dating advice, or is it just, like, regular dating advice?
It's kind of widow-specific because it's definitely advice about how to, like, as a woman in your 40s or 50s, find a new man. And the advice was very, I would say, 50s in that, like, it was very— very like a man doesn't want, like, you're a fully formed person, obviously with opinions, but like, don't do that. Like, don't be like that because
but hide
like,
that
you're already 50. So don't act like you're 50. Basically is like, was the widow dating advice. But it worked well. She has a boyfriend now.
Oh,
he's really
sick.
Nice. We like him. We like him.
Okay. That's awesome. And how long have they been together?
Like maybe 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's real boyfriend
yeah.
material.
Yeah. No, she's definitely, she has her own life. She's doing her things. I think it also made me really realize how much of a person my mom was even without my dad, which I think a lot of people realize almost like the opposite when their dads die, that their mom really relied on their dad in a way that was like almost like their mom is no longer a person without their dad. It was just very nice to see how truly independent my mom was and is.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I worry with my parents. I think it's kind of, I think if my dad died, my mom would be like, wait, who died? Like, she would be fine.
But, she's like, she's so good.
But I do think my dad would be like completely lost. Not that they love each other fiercely, but my mom is just like more independent, I think.
In terms of who is more equipped, I think about this a lot too, where it's like in terms of who is more equipped to deal with the other's death, I would say this is the best case scenario. Not that there is a best case scenario, but right. If there was, this would
if there
be
was, it. This is it.
This is it.
So there's the grief of your father, and then your grandfather, you said, died recently. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about, we already discussed this a little bit, but can you talk about how, like, your relationship to grief has changed since your dad died? Like, in like, how is it different the day that it happens, or, you know, the couple of days after, than it is 5 years from then, or, you know, or now?
I don't know. And I think it's, like, different every time, truly. Like, I think that I, this time around, like, this was, again, this was the second person that I had lost, and I had a very uncomplicatedly positive relationship with my grandpa. So that definitely also almost made it easier, because it's like, oh my God, like, it was a very uncomplicated feeling of grief. Like, it was a very, like, oh my God, I'm really sad. Like, oh, I wish I could have spent more time with him. And then kind of, but also, you know, he was older. And, like, my dad just wasn't old. So I think, like, that was, you lost a child, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, when someone dies before their time, it's just, it's like this incomprehensible kind of, like.
Yeah.
Like, whereas, like, when someone dies and they're 90, it's like, all right.
Yeah. This is how I think about that. And I don't want to put these thoughts to you, but
yeah.
When someone dies and they're 90, like, part of me is like, oh, Good.
Yeah. Like, no, good. Like, I'm like, they had a long ass life. Like, that is nice.
My wife has a great aunt who is incredibly old and has, like, outlived all of her friends and is just like, I don't need to be alive anymore. I don't know why. I'm just still here. I don't know what's happening. Right. I can't die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, it's like a late in life death is a gift in a way, you know? It's like, wow.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, I also think with my grandpa dying and having had my dad already die, just kind of like really truly internalizing that, like, death will never, it's never something that you actually know how to process. And I don't think it matters how many times you go through it. It's like your ability to process it is, like, almost like going to be limited, period. Like, I don't think there's a way to fully process grief ever, in my opinion.
I mean, that makes sense, because death in and of itself is, like, sort of, no matter how much you get it, like, pretty incomprehensible.
Yeah, it just doesn't really make sense. Like, it feels very surreal all the time. It's like, you know, I think it's almost impossible for you to not feel like your memory of the person is, like, scrambled in some way. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you feel like, we talked before about how, like, grief hasn't made us, like, better people or anything, but do you feel as though grief changed you in some way? Like, these losses have made you different?
Oh, my dad's death 100% changed me so much, just in that, like, it made me realize, I mean, okay, he died at 52, and so much of what he did was because he was like, oh, I'm going to live a long time. So, like, it's like everything he did every day was like, oh, I want to make a lot of money now so that I can retire. I want to, like, blank so I can blank. I want to blah, blah, blah so I can blank. And that was not articulate at all. Seeing someone plan for a future that never happens, and seeing someone plan well for a future that never happens, and seeing someone make a lot of sacrifices for a future that never happens has really changed the way that I look at my own life and my own day to day. And it's definitely made me prioritize my short-term happiness. Like, obviously, you know, I have long-term goals that I work toward, and, like, all my short-term happiness, like, tends to align with what my long-term goals are. But it's definitely made me, like, be like, I'm never going to make compromises or sacrifices for something 10 years down the road. Like, I'm just not going to do that anymore.
Wow. That's one of the few philosophies that anyone has articulated clearly on this about the way death changed them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think about that all the time. It's just, it's literally changed my day to day. It's changed, yeah, the way that I can, like, literally see that, like, planning for things in the future or worrying about things that haven't happened yet is so not, it doesn't do anything for you. And you don't know. And, like, he didn't know he was going to die that day. So,
yeah, and I guess if he, maybe, sounds like what you're saying is if he had known, like, I'm going to die on this day.
Maybe he would have done things
different. Yeah.
A lot of his life would have been different. Yeah, if he had known he was going to die at 52, I think a lot of his life would have been really different. Because he had spent, too, like, he had spent the last, like, 10 years of his life in a job that he literally hated so that he could, like, save money so he could, like, not do that. So he could, like, retire, essentially. He wanted to retire early. And he finally was going to retire. And then he died. And I just truly am, like, just blown away by how much that hurts me, because I'm like, he was also a guy who, like, had things that he loved to do. He had so many hobbies. He had, like, so many things. And I just find that heartbreaking.
Yeah. But another question that I thought of is your dad was hit by a car, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the person who hit him?
I can't talk about it, but he's fine. I know him. He's someone in the community.
He's like someone that you know in.
Yeah, I went to high school with him.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
But you can't talk about it.
No.
Okay, respect.
But yeah.
Then we will not.
Yeah, but it was definitely a very weird and complicated situation that resulted in a lot of outcomes that I just, you know, couldn't anticipate.
Okay, segue to as comedians, I think, like, we process the world through humor a lot. I'm wondering if there are any things that you remember from either from the time, like, around your dad's passing, like, up to his funeral, maybe, that, like, when looking back on it, made you laugh.
I mean, there were so many things. I think, like, the speeches that his friends gave about him, my other friend and I talk about all the time, because one of his best friends gave a speech in which he talks about how my dad, like, never talked about his family. Like,
he
gave a whole speech about, like, golfing with my dad and, like, how he never had any idea what was going on with my dad or his family. And then his other friend gave a speech in which he also said something similar. And I'm just like, it's just so funny to me that your friends are at your funeral giving speeches about how you never talked about your family.
Also, an insane thing to say at a funeral.
But I think it's like when you also, they're grieving too. Like, they don't know. They're just like, yeah, Jeff and I golf together every weekend and I never knew what was going on with him. Like, that's so funny. Yeah, I spent so much time with this guy. No idea what his kids were doing. No idea what his wife was up to.
That does feel also very male. To be like, I spent every moment with this guy. I could not tell you one thing about him.
No, literally. And I think, like, that is so funny to me, because I'm like, that's very, it's very, like, you know, telling. It also makes me feel better, because it's like my dad just was really private and, again, really repressed. And that's just reconfirmed in so many other ways from other people, where it's like, it wasn't me, you know, it was just like a man who was very incapable of talking about himself or his feelings.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty normal for dudes, especially, like, every day that you go back in time, that gets more and more normal for dudes.
Yeah. No, that's so true. Yeah. Like, men right now talk about their feelings more than they ever have historically. Yes,
that's exactly right. If I could not talk about my feelings for one day, my wife would be like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You've actually exactly. Had enough of your feelings. Thank you.
Right. The soft boys are here, but they weren't always.
Yes. We are in the soft boy era.
We
soft
are.
Boys are thriving.
You're talking about your feelings. Maybe too much. Yeah.
You talk about this on stage a little bit. Has the way in which you've talked about it changed at all? You say you do a kind of irreverent humor, but.
I definitely think, so I started stand-up. I started doing stand-up in 2019, so like 3 years ago. And I think the way that it's changed since then is I've wanted to be less irreverent about it. And I've wanted to talk about more things about him. But what I'm realizing is really hard, and why it's hard for me to talk to, like, do jokes where I have a more sincere premise, and then obviously, you know, writing joke about it, is it's hard to like build in humanity for him. And that almost like makes it so like what I'm saying is unlikable. Because it's like, I can't give you all the context of like, he was a person.
It ends up being more like storytelling is kind of like what you have to do.
Exactly.
To
and
paint
it's like,
a picture.
And it's like, I'm not there yet where I'm like, I want to tell a story about it. So it's like, if I can't do a setup punchline again, in a way that like feels like I'm not the most evil person on the planet. It's been rough. And again, I think I wanted to talk about it less irreverently because I've just, again, developed more humanity for him and more kind of like respect for who he was. And like when I saw him as when I was an angsty 20, 21 year old, I saw him just like as like, you know, someone who I'm like, I can say anything I want about you. And then as I've gotten older, it's like, well, yeah, I can say anything I want about you. But like, is that how I still feel or like?
Yeah, that's also very tricky because like you're someone who's pretty actively on social media and posting and like, do I want this joke about my dad to be there forever?
Yeah, I think that's also, it's like the permanence of that because I'm just like, well, how I feel about it changes day to day and how comfortable I feel about having anything out there related to him changes day to day.
I think that's like such a like sophisticated thought to have about your own comedy. Like I didn't have that. When I've been doing comedy for 3 years, I did not have that thought in my mind. In my mind, it was, let me be as funny as possible. Who cares about anything else? And now I look back at things that I said. I did Seth Meyers and I look back at that set and I'm like, I wish I didn't realize anyone was ever going to hear these jokes.
Yeah, I think there's when you first start comedy too, I think there's a real lack of awareness of how permanent certain things can be and can become without you even like really. I think that there is a lot of, what can I say that's funny? And in those early stages, you know, you say a lot of things that like you really regret, like at least I, like there are certain jokes that I've tweeted. There are certain jokes that I've told that I'm like, that was not, I wish, no.
Yeah. How can I delete the internet?
Right. Exactly. Right. How can I erase all of evidence that I've ever existed? I'm like, oh God, like let's not.
Yeah. I think about that. I think about that a lot. And obviously with your dad, with my son, with like something that's precious to you, like not in a negative way, but like really precious, that sense of like, I really don't want this joke to be, I don't want to like go back in 10 years and play this over again and hear kids and hear people laughing at this thing that I now hate.
Yes. I think that's like a really icky part of it. And again, you just can't anticipate your own feelings about it 5 years from now. So it's hard to like want to document it in any way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Are there areas that you feel better joking about than others? Are there some things that you feel like I can make jokes about this and it's fine. But are there other jokes where you're like, this joke has got to, I can't believe I ever said this.
With grief?
Yeah. Well, related to your dad.
I mean, like it's crazy because I'm like, sometimes I still, it depends on my mood. That's also it. There are certain jokes about him that like, if I'm just like in a mood where I'm like, I just want to say that today, I will say it. You know, like I have jokes about the way that, you know, his death impacted me financially in a good way or what, like I have lots of kind of jokes where if I'm in a mood where I'm like, that's fine to say, I'll say it. But again, it just varies day to day. And it's always, every joke about him that I tell is something that I would never post. Like if it isn't a taped set, I'm like, that's just for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
It's like, I would never tell a joke about him on late night. I would never tell a joke about him like in any like real formal capacity where I knew that it would like be recorded and like redistributed.
That makes a lot of sense.
At least at this juncture.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But I don't
know. And I think if it's something that's interesting to you to like pursue that, and if it's important to you to talk about it, then I'm sure you'll find a way that eventually feels good.
I think it really will be my movie about him faking his own death. Cause I'm like, I think I need a bigger canvas, and I need to be able to fictionalize things in order to fully provide like, yeah, the level of humanity and thought that I would want to be like my reflection on it.
That makes a lot of sense to have, because just like we were talking about in the context of like a comedy club or whatever, you've got 5 minutes, you know what I mean? Or 10 minutes or, you know, maybe whatever, 20 minutes, whatever it is, it's going to feel like you'll tell the joke and then you'll want to be like, but that's not okay. That's not it. If you guys, look, can we just pause the show for a second?
So right. You're like, hold on. Let me explain this. Yeah. time out. Yeah.
Could you guys just stop drinking actually? Cause it's distracting me. Let me tell you more about him.
Exactly. You guys need to know. He was like a person though. I love him. Like, yeah, I'm like, I'm not gonna, but I do think like in a broader context in which I can like fictionalize certain parts to like emphasize emotional story points, etc. Like that is something I would be interested in doing in the future.
That is beautiful. I can't wait to see this movie.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's what we're building up to.
Really soon. Probably soon.
Yeah, very, very soon.
Mm-hmm. That's how that works.
A question for you is, do you think of your dad as being somewhere now? Your dad and your grandfather, like people who have died, do you imagine them anywhere?
To be honest, no. I don't really personally have like an afterlife in mind, but I can feel it. Like, I'm like, I think that they exist in memories. And I think memories are very powerful in that way. Where I'm like, it's also the kind of thing like we were talking about, but because it's like, you know, I'm a writer, I'm a creative. It's like, I literally feel like I'm like it's me thinking about him or me thinking about people that keeps them alive in my mind.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. Are there any memories about your dad do you feel comfortable sharing that like stick out to you? They're like recurrent memories.
Yeah, it's so funny because I always felt like he wasn't interested in the things that I was interested in. But then when I was in high school, we all got Kindles and he would literally download every book that I would download and he'd read it.
Come on, that's very sweet.
I know. And it was so sweet because it's like, It's thinking that someone isn't interested in you and then just realizing that they have a different, the ways that they're going to be able to connect with you are not necessarily like through talking.
Yeah.
It was very interesting because it's like also just like so funny because then he'd like talk about the books with me. It was just like a little thing. And it was just like so funny too because I downloaded Mindy Kaling's book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? Which was the book that made me want to be a comedy writer. I was 16 when I read it. And he downloaded it too. And he said something one time. He was like, oh, you can be like Mindy. And like it was just like, it was so funny because I always felt like not supported by him or not heard by him in so many ways. And then it was just like this like random thing where it's like he literally read every single book that I read.
Wow. That is making me want to cry.
I know.
That's beautiful. And that understanding that you've come to with him even after he's died, I think is also can be very rare. Like, I think a lot of people lose a parent and have that relationship is just kind of like flailing. You know what I mean? Like they never are able to connect in a way that feels healthy to them. And I think that's like enviable that you've found a way in your own mind to like come to peace with him.
I mean, it's almost like the fact that our relationship was so complicated made it easier to process a little bit because it was like he was so much a person to me. Like he was so much not someone on a pedestal. And I think a lot of people have that with their parents or a lot of people have that with like people that they have in their lives who die where it's like this person was kind of like we were talking about like this like superhuman, like perfect figure. And like just like knowing how much like he was just a person already by the time he died made it so I could really truly like grieve him as opposed to like an idea.
That's so wise.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I only said it that way because you had made fun of yourself for not being articulate, but I feel like you're a genius.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Dana, that's the end of our podcast.
Wow.
This was A Good Cry with Dana Donnelly. Thanks for listening, and I hope it helps. A Good Cry is brought to you by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach. I'm talking Sabrina Fonfetter and Daniel Powell. Of course, Richard Corson, and don't you forget Houston Snyder. It is also produced by V. Abigail Lowenthal and mixed and edited by the one and only Ian Sorrentino.